Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's Mark and Kitchen.
It's that at your home ballpark. You're using technology that only you have access to and against which the other team has no defense. There's nothing you can do to counteract what they're doing, and only they have the access to it.
I'll ask these fellas. Maybe they've seen them. Excuse me, have you seen... Hold on a second. Hey, pal, stop talking while I'm talking, all right? You want a sandwich full of knuckles, do you?
But Alex Cora, if you talk to anybody in baseball, which I obviously have, Max, they will tell you he's a baseball lifer. This guy has been around baseball all his life. He loves the game.
Wow, that's so nice of you to say, man. I appreciate it. Hey, you know, well, I've been a really big fan of yours.
On Sports Radio 103.7 WEEI.
He has a realization that despite being a toy, you know what? I don't believe it. I still don't believe it. And he looks up at the window and he sees the open air and the open space. And he thinks for just a second, just maybe, it's going to happen.
To infinity and beyond.
What's changed? How badly it's looked in the last couple of weeks. Not just the wild card game, you know, the Miami game, and then the string of, granted, you had tough competition, but it didn't look good for Tom.
Why didn't you tell me this man rolls like this?
I told you
no,
already.
No, you didn't.
I did.
What'd you say?
I did this.
What do this mean, man? Speak English to me.
That means I go this way and you go this way.
I go that way, you go this way.
Yes.
Now, it's time for Mark and Kitchen on Sports Radio 103.7 WEEI.
Coming at ya!
All right, welcome into the Mark and Kitchen Show, 103.7 WEEI. Mark Dondero, Ben Kitchen here in Providence. Ben, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Mark. How are you?
Clunky start to the show.
Hey, whatever
Ben in my ear, that's okay. Good morning, everybody. Okay, so we're going to start. I have an opening take. You have an opening take. I know you want to get to this Red Sox stuff.
Yeah.
I want to get to some of this baseball stuff. I didn't think we'd be talking this hardcore baseball in January, but that's fine. This was interesting all week long. It got us through this week. There were some shocking elements to it for me. There were some surprising things here and there. There were some not so surprising things. A lot of different thoughts. I'll let you start off.
Well, I'm glad the Red Sox fired Cora. I'm glad the Astros fired Hinch and Lunau. I'm glad the Mets fired Beltran. I'm glad all of those guys have been fired. You know, what they did, they earned their punishment right now from the teams. You know, Hinch and Lunau earned their punishment from the league, and they also earned it from the teams losing their jobs.
Yeah, real quick, though. The Red Sox, they didn't fire Cora. They mutually agreed to part ways.
No, they fired him because there's no way he mutually agreed to that nonsense, BS PR spin. And by the way, the Red Sox are the worst at trying to play the PR game and spin things. Oh, my God, they're inept. They have very smart people up there, but God, they're stupid sometimes. My biggest problem right now is, and it really comes down to how much power the MLBPA has, the fact that the commissioner couldn't really do much to the players in this situation. And they were the ones really putting this system into place in Houston, or at least that's how the report from Drelick and Rosenthal came out. By the way, kudos, Drelick. Great job. The fact that the players haven't been punished in any way is very disappointing. Because just because someone else loses their job doesn't mean they're really going to stop. They're going to find another creative way of doing it. They always have, and they will continue to do so. Baseball is just run by morons. Greedy, stupid morons. And they are killing their own game by consistently shooting themselves in the foot. And it's really sad to watch a fantastic sport be no longer a fantastic sport.
Who are the morons? The people like Cora and Beltran and Hinch?
No. The more baseball, Manfred, the people that are running the game,
responsible for the cheating, though.
They knew it was going on for a couple of years. All they did was send out a memo. Hey, guys, please stop this. We know you're doing it. Please stop it. And this situation, they've been trying to brush it under the rug. They've been unable to do so because of the good job of Evan Drellick and Ken Rosenthal. They want this buried and gone. They don't want us knowing about it. They don't want us to know how prevalent it is across the game. They buried their heads in the sand when it came to steroids, and then that all blew up in their face.
You think they would have learned from that experience?
No. It's run by greedy a-holes. Bud Selig is one of the worst commissioners in any sport ever. And Manfred's not doing a good job either. This sport is in a bad position because people aren't watching the game nearly as much as they used to. They're not going to the games as much as they used to. They're not spending as much time of their life involved in the sport of baseball as they used to. And baseball keeps hurting themselves. They refuse to fix the game for us, the fans. And then when situations like this arrive, they're not transparent in any way with the fans to let us know exactly what's going on. So now we're left to think, oh, every team's cheating. And then we're left to think, why am I going to watch a game where every team is cheating all the time? That's all they do. What's the point of this? How am I ever going to know who's actually better? That's the fun part about sports. Baseball just keeps shooting themselves in the foot, and they deserve it. They deserve it from their ignorance over the last 20 years.
And the only time we're really talking about baseball is when we're talking about this kind of scandalous stuff.
I mean, that's not really what you
want to be talking about when you're talking about a sport.
Think about it. The Red Sox may trade away or lose within a year or 6 months or whatever the best player on their team, a young superstar in the game. And it has barely been talked about by us or anyone else, for that matter, over the last couple of months. Baseball gets its most publicity right now because of this scandal. A scandalous thing is what's getting us to talk about baseball. And that's it.
Do you think every team
in the league cares about the Mookie Betts situation right now? And people really haven't cared that much. They've kind of cared internally a little bit. I don't want to see them lose. But it's not even been a topic, really.
Do you think every team in the league was cheating to the extent of the Astros and Red Sox?
No.
So you took the macro view of this. I'm going to take the micro view. This is what I didn't understand. Did you see the press conference the Red Sox had the other day?
Yeah, it was atrocious.
All I want to know, and this is what I couldn't understand, why did that press conference feel like Alex Cora was sort of a victim in this whole thing? They made me feel like I was supposed to feel like Alex Cora was a victim and I should feel bad. We feel bad. We loved him. All of these things. Why am I supposed to feel that way? This guy, let's talk about what this guy did. This guy helped orchestrate a calculated and sophisticated cheating scheme in Houston, and then the Red Sox hired him, mm-hmm. and he brought that scheme to Boston. And as a result, on January 15th, the Boston Red Sox had to have a press conference where they had to address all these cheating allegations and the dismissal of their manager not even a month before pitchers and catchers report. Not ideal. This guy, and also, you maybe tainted the World Series you won in 2018. That's another debate we can have later. This is bad. This is what the hiring of this man did. Was he a nice guy? Did he get along with the media? Was he a good manager in certain regards? Of course, I liked him as a manager.
Yeah.
Based on what I knew, I thought he was, you know, he was a young guy. He was aggressive. He knew how to handle the players.
It also starts to make you rethink him as the manager, and some of the elements that we kind of like was him being a little braggadocious and boasting a little bit and taking shots at the Yankees and all that stuff. But then it makes you rethink that and go, that's all great if you're doing it on the up and up. But if you're going to all of a sudden be a trash talker while you're cheating, screw you. Screw you. You're cheating and then trash talking me because you cheated me? That's ridiculous. I have no sympathy for Cora, but going back to that press conference, gave me two thoughts. One, they knew about the situation that was going on. They're not going to completely throw him under the bus, and they're going to kind of reserve judgment, see what was going on. So it made me think they kind of had an idea of what was happening. Or the other side of it, they're just so unbelievably incompetent when it comes to dealing with the media.
I thought it was an embarrassment overall. That press conference was an embarrassment.
It was a complete embarrassment. Everyone should be embarrassed for how they performed in that situation. The only person I felt bad for was Chaim Bloom because he walks into a situation where he's like, Now I have to defend stuff that had nothing to do with me.
No, I'm not including him. I thought he was impressive, actually, in that press conference.
I thought Henry was embarrassing. I thought Sam Kennedy was embarrassing.
Oh, Sam Kennedy. If I hear the commissioner's directive one more time, I'm going to spit across this table.
Hey, the commissioner's directive was to stop cheating a couple of years ago, but he kept doing it.
Right.
So don't play that card now.
All I know is if a guy is engaged in an affair that goes on for 4 months every Tuesday night, I'm not going to feel bad when his marriage goes to hell. Hell, I mean, I'm not going to feel bad. If you're engaged in an affair that's going on late at night on Tuesdays for 4 or 5 months, secret text messages, all these secret rendezvous, and then your marriage goes south, I'm not going to feel bad for that guy. This wasn't some mistake because you were at the bar and had drinks and went up to the hotel and it was just a big, a regrettable something you did that you regret. That's not what this was. This was a calculated effort over time. They were trying to get it better. Did you see those comments that he made in London about the Yankees and Carlos Beltran and all that?
Yeah.
They were trying to. They had something in place. And if you read between the lines now, they had something in place and they were trying to improve it. We got to be better. We got to figure out how to tighten it up. I mean, they were working on it. I don't feel bad. I liked him as a manager. But he screwed himself. He screwed the organization.
Yep.
I don't care that he was nice to Rochi and that he gave some sound to Coit. He gave Coit sound after the interview, after the press conference on a one-on-one.
Cute.
Great. This guy came in. He orchestrated an elaborate cheating scheme and tainted the organization's accomplishments over the last year and a half. That's what happened.
I have no sympathy. I'm glad he's gone. I wish they came out and were honest and said they fired him. But they're incapable of being honest. They're just incapable of doing it. You know, that's what happens when some people think they're so much smarter than everyone else, so much smarter than the general public out there, and that's them. And overall, I love what they've done with the Red Sox, that ownership group. Love it. Multiple championships. Feels different going there. The improvements they have made to Fenway Park over the years. I'm a Liverpool fan. They did great work with Liverpool, but there's certain areas where they just don't get near a microphone. Just come, always be behind the scenes. Good Lord, please don't ever talk to a microphone ever again. Any of them. I hate listening to any of them talk because they're all full of crap.
Do I think that this is going to derail the 2020 season? Not necessarily. If Chaim Bloom,
how well did you think the 2020 season was going to go to begin with?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, if Chaim Bloom is competent, we'll see what happens if they can get a manager that's right for the job. I don't think just because the timing isn't ideal that they're screwed. It doesn't help, but I'm not going to just throw this season away based on what happened.
I don't think they're screwed. There's plenty of quality managers out there. But then again, I look at it and go, how many of them were cheating too? You know, Jack McDowell just comes out and talks about Tony La Russa installing a cheating system in Chicago back in the 80s.
I mean, for crying out loud, the 80s. Baseball and cheating go hand in hand. But I just don't think when you incorporate technology into the process, that is a clear-cut, different level of trying to stretch the limits of the game. That's just different. It's one thing George Brett put the pine tar a little too high on his bat, or you're stealing signs during the game organically. I'm okay with that. When you start incorporating technology, that's different. That's cheating. I mean, the thing I was trying to tell you earlier, the tweet from Curt Schilling was eye-opening to me. He said that if he pitched during the time where they were stealing signs like that, he would have been lit up if they knew that curveball was coming and fastball was coming.
He did pitch during that time.
Well, he said in October they would have lit him up. But yeah, but I don't know how, like, that was in the 80s. You don't know how many people were doing it. You don't know in 04 or in 01 how many people were doing it. He said if he was pitching while that was going on and the sophisticated system was in place, he would have gotten his tits lit. So I was surprised to hear that. He feels like he would have been at a severe disadvantage, especially when you're not throwing 99 miles an hour.
Fair.
So, one thing I wanted to ask you before we just move on.
What do you think was the, Is the Altuve situation, that screenshot of him after that walk-off and him taking his jersey and as he's rounding third, heading home to his teammates that are ready to mob him,
yeah,
and he's grabbing his jersey and clutching it like, don't rip the jersey.
Yeah.
Don't rip it. Is that worse than just the kind of blind allegations we saw come, you know, not allegations, but what had come out from the league in that press conference? Do you think that is going to be more of a lasting impact on baseball fans or people that view this?
Okay, I love the question. My assessment of that was that it was damning. Now, apparently, they've looked into that. Rob Manfred, MLB, have looked into that. They haven't found much. But that, to me, was damning. That video of him not wanting the shirt ripped, why else would you not want the shirt ripped?
Made it 10 times worse for me.
Of course it did. You worried your wife's going to have to do extra laundry if the shirt gets on the ground. I mean, they don't wash the clothes, but you know what I mean. Like, what's the big deal? You got a million jerseys. Is it going to a charity? No. That was really bad. And it was also Jose Altuve in that video that you referenced of him holding the shirt.
Yeah.
That is when, and I don't want to, we don't have to get into all of this, but that was one thing. Amidst all these Patriots situations over the course of the last decade, Spygate, Deflategate, Spygate 2, that's the one thing you never, ever saw. You never saw a player compliment the initial scandal,
yeah,
with something that he was doing on the field that sort of backed up what they were talking about was going on off the field. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There was no Tom Brady doing anything shady that you could see with the cameras on the field during Spygate. Here's Brady listening to this, instruction that he got from the guy that was looking at the video about the whatever. That's not even realistic. None of that ever happened. Here, it happened. So that was especially damning for me to see him. I mean, so emphatically, he's going, no, no, no. And then he's holding the jersey. Why else would you? And then they asked him about it. Ken Rosenthal, after that game, there was an interview, asked him why he didn't want his jersey ripped. He goes, what? Like, he didn't hear. He heard. Yeah. He just didn't hear. Think of a lie. And then he was like, oh, yeah, my wife. My wife didn't like that or something. It didn't even make any sense.
Yeah, so the easy answer to that, if you are paying any attention, is, dude, I'm going to auction this off for charity after the game. Yeah. I don't want it ripped. I'm going to auction it off for the charity I work with.
But look.
Done.
They said they haven't found anything.
Bull crap.
But I don't believe it. There is a reason that guy did not want that jersey ripped off. That is a damning
piece. There's that picture of Josh Reddick with possibly a piece of tape right there over his left kind of shoulder that you see the image of him.
I didn't see that
after
one.
When they're celebrating in the locker room and his jersey's kind of open, his undershirt's kind of like down or whatever. And then it's clear it's either a piece of like that ticker tape, but it's not. Or it's a straight up piece of like green electrical tape, something like that, right on. You can see what I'm doing. No one else can. But right by, his heart.
Above his breastplate, yeah.
Yeah. And again, that's another piece of this evidence that these players were actively doing it. And they're getting off scot-free. It's unbelievable to me. Now, what was worse to you? What's worse to you? This scandal or Spygate? Keep in mind, I know you're a Patriots fan.
This was the best way I heard it put on Twitter. Somebody tweeted this. I think it was Dave Brown. He said Spygate, and I agree with this. He said Spygate was trying to break. It was like breaking into the library to study more.
Yeah.
This was stealing the answers from the test.
That's good.
Yeah.
I like that.
I like that too.
I like that.
That's Spygate.
This is the guy that works for the Concord Monitor?
Yes. We got to have him on the show.
He's good.
But what I was going to say was, I also think Spygate, I believe everybody was doing that kind of thing, trying to find video of this. I mean, video, here's the thing, video and video review in football, I don't know, it feels so much more widespread. That's what you do in football. You review the film. Now, I know in baseball they probably break down their batting in the Severino press conference.
Yeah.
Everyone was doing it. Like, I think that means something, you know? Everybody was doing it. I think it was much more common, and I don't think it was as unique as this was and the sophisticated scheme that this group of people put into place.
It's not as dissimilar, I think, as you're thinking it is. I liked what the tweet you referenced from Dave Brown. I liked it, but I don't think it's completely accurate because it is partly taking the answers to the test too. If you're looking, the signals are, and you have footage of that, instead of being able to do it with your eye, now you can remember it and catalog it and keep it forever. It's kind of the same thing. You know, not quite as bad, I don't think, but it's pretty similar because, hey, what if I'm, you know, rubbing across my chest as the defensive coordinator? That's telling the middle linebacker that he's got an assignment on this play that's outside of the game plan typically. Now I know that. It's the same thing. It's a signal to tell me exactly what they're supposed to be doing. It's pretty similar.
But I
think this is way worse simply because you already had Spygate happen in American sports. So everyone knew exactly what could happen, the stigma that could be attached to you as a team or as a manager when you get caught with a scandal like this. Patriots have never been able to wash away Spygate.
No, but there's a few other differences. Number one, okay.
I think it's worse simply because of the ignorance. That's what I'm going with it.
With Spygate,
arrogance,
you never could make the connection, or at least I couldn't. You could tell me, maybe you just tried to explain. I could never make the connection as to, okay, you filmed the other team's signals. How did that information benefit you in real time? That's what I could never figure out. How did that benefit them in real time? How did Tom Brady benefit from that in real time? Do you have an answer for me?
More likely he'd benefit from it in the second matchup. Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, you still got to look at the signals.
Yeah, I know.
So how would he look at the signal? So he was looking at the signals while he was under center?
Oh, no, not him. But there's a big difference in football and baseball is a coach can directly communicate with a quarterback right into his ear. Right?
Okay.
So if the coach knows what that signal is because they studied it from the time before, I can just jump down to Tom and say, blitz is coming from the two outside backers right now.
Okay.
Based on the signal. So that's how you do it in real time. Because if you have that second matchup, say it's the Miami Dolphins. First game, you film the signals, right?
Yeah.
You have to decipher them. It takes a little while to decipher it. So you meet them again in week 15. Now you've had a long time to look at that film. Now you know what those signals might be. And let's say the Dolphins didn't change their signals.
Yeah.
Right? We've seen football teams do that. Bill Callahan and the Raiders did not change over any of their offense when Gruden went to Tampa Bay. So week 15, you play the Dolphins for the second time. Now I know what some of those signals from the defensive coordinator to the Mike linebacker might be. Now as the offensive coordinator, whoever's up in the booth relaying the plays down to Tom, can tell him that information as well.
I just feel like so many things have to go right. You have to get the signals quick enough because the communication cuts off at a certain amount of time. The other team can't change the signals at all. Nothing can be different than the first time around. I mean,
But you also know from playing baseball, you got to do the same thing. You got to, you know, break it down in real time. Granted, the difference is I'm going to play you again tomorrow and then maybe the day after, or maybe I played you yesterday, I'm going to play you today and tomorrow. There's a difference there, but, you know, as a catcher and a pitcher don't always have the same exact signals going back and forth, or well, from the catcher to the pitcher. They change them up.
Yeah, but
just like the third base coach changes up his signals to the runner
first. I can tell you, though, how it works in real time in baseball. I've done it. I've been a part of it where we knew the signs, and you listen for something, the banging of the trash can. So that's realistic to me. In football, maybe it's because I didn't play football, didn't play quarterback. I don't know how all of those things happen. I mean, you have to be in the huddle. You have to give the play. Okay, maybe Brady knows that the blitz is coming. Does the receiver know? I mean, there's so many things. There's so many elements to it. I never could connect that. And the other thing I was going to say.
But if the quarterback knows, in theory,
you can call a hot route or
something. Exactly. Yeah. Everyone else will know based on what he decides to audible to.
Okay. But then, so that was 2007.
Yep. But it supposedly happened years before.
Yeah. Okay. Brady's best years then came after all of that. So then it's like, what am I supposed to think? Those were his best years. 07 through what? 2017, the last decade. 2018. When was he the MVP? 2018? No, 2017. 2007 to 2017 were his best years.
Sure.
All after that. So then it's like, well, then what am I supposed to think? And I see what you're saying, but it's still, I don't know. Like, you'd have to go back into and watch. I mean, the defensive line, they're getting signals while Brady is calling the play. Depending on when that communication gets cut off, you know, I don't know if they'd be able to. It's not like they can talk to him while he's in the shotgun.
No.
So that doesn't really hold up either. I don't know how in real time.
It does because the signals are coming in while signals might be coming in from the defensive coordinator to the linebackers while you're in your huddle telling your play to your guys. So if I am already watching that and seeing what the personnel grouping in is or something like that, I can, while you're still in the huddle up in the booth, I can directly write to your ear tell you what's going on.
Okay. If you get it in time.
If you get it in time. Yeah. Obviously, that's all what it's predicated on.
Yeah.
In both of them. You got to get them in time.
Yeah. Okay. So maybe they're more similar. But to me, it's still this is more directly. It affects the game more directly in baseball to me because I know how it works. I've been there where you've been up at bat and you can hear the sign or you hear the cue, and you know that okay, somebody's banging on the trash can. It's a breaking ball.
Yeah.
So, and I just feel like I said it was more widespread in football. I think it was something everybody was doing, and this isn't something that every team was doing.
I agree, but in both cases, the commissioner told you guys to stop, and you didn't stop.
Correct. All right. A lot to get to today. I want to obviously talk about the NFL, the playoffs that are still ongoing, Tom Brady, the Patriots, Celtics thought, Kyrie Irving thought. Let's get it trending right now. This is the Mark and Kitchen Show, 103.7 WEEI.
We now return to Mark and Kitchen on Sports Radio 103.7 WEEI.
All right, back here, 401-737-1287 is the phone number. We were talking about the Red Sox to open the show and this whole cheating scandal. I was given a picture by Devin of
Josh Reddick.
Josh Reddick doing a post-game interview for Fox with tape on his chest and a wire showing. I mean, that's not even how – I mean, you're just – that's not even close. There's a wire showing on the network. Why didn't somebody ask him? They got ex-players on that set. Nobody said, hey – what's that? There's a wire on your body. You know, are you going into a sting up or an interview for the FBI after this to shake someone down? What is going on?
There's clearly mobsters on the Astros. He's the CI. He's the confidential informant.
I mean, why would they not ask about that? See, but this is what I'm saying.
The players don't really care about the game being a better game and a more enjoyable game for the audience. They don't care. They care about making their money. Some of them care about winning. Very few care about winning cleanly, unfortunately. They don't care about making the game any better. Look at what's been talked about over the last couple of years in terms of speeding up pace of play. And then you have douchebags like David Price go, I'm not changing. I'm not changing. I'm perfectly adequate right now. I'm fine. I'm going to throw every 2 minutes. I'm not changing to throw every 20 seconds. They don't want to change. The players do not want the sport to change. They want to continue racking in a ton of money, which is fine. I got no problem with that. But they just want to continue racking in all that money, and they don't want anything to be uncomfortable for them. They don't want to have to change anything they do. And the sport is suffering partly because of them, major part because of the players, and their inability to want any kind of change to make the game more enjoyable and better for fans and to potentially make more money because of it. Because if the game's better, it's faster and everything like that, you might have more people showing up at Marlins Park. And if more people are showing up at Marlins Park, that means the Marlins are making a little bit more money, which means Marlins, in theory, would spend a little more money, which means players would, across the board, make a little bit more money.
Well, if you want to go into why the game is struggling, that's a separate discussion.
It's not, though, but it's attached to it because this is another reason why the game's going to continue to struggle moving forward, because people are losing confidence and faith in the game that anything is real. Look at what happened after the steroid era. Yeah, there was a little bit of a boom, particularly because Boston all of a sudden took off in 2003 and 2004 and wins it in 2004. That was a big part of it. And then you have a Boston-Yankees rivalry, which helped the game a lot. But baseball has never felt the same since the steroid scandal kind of broke. That magic we had after Cal Ripken in 96, I think he broke it. And then you have in 98, you have the home run chase. Ever since then, it's been downhill for the game because people have lost confidence in it, which does affect the quality of it.
The game has gone downhill because of the way society is today.
That's a big part of it.
And I think a big thing is just as simple as the internet. Think about when the internet really blew up. Baseball has never been as popular since. It just does. The way the game is structured doesn't jive with today's human being. It's as simple as that. It's a slow game. I know everyone laughs at me when I say this. I think the way that the uniforms look and the way that they dress don't help the situation because it is sort of an old-time look from the 50s and with the pants and the stirrups and the button-down. It's not the way, you know, it doesn't jive with the hip-hop culture. It's not a fast-paced game. It doesn't do great nowadays bet-wise. I mean, it's fun. You can bet on baseball, but it's not quite as interesting or pleasing as football or even basketball to gamble on. There's just so many aspects to it that don't jive with today. I mean, when you want something, Instagram, Facebook, at your fingertips, YouTube. That's not baseball. You got to let it play out. 162 games, 9 innings, 4.5 hours, 2.5 minutes between pitches. You got to let it play out. That's why it's not as popular today. They don't want to make the changes that you need to make. I don't want to see the entire game change.
Point.
But that's what it
they
is.
They don't want to make the changes.
Right.
They don't know how to. They don't know what to do.
I mean, look, baseball, it's like, I get you don't want to make the changes and disrupt the sanctity of the game, but if people are using
sanctity of the game, I mean, Jesus, even when we're talking about this particular stealing signs with technology, there is no sanctity to the sport of baseball when what you hear after people say, yeah, they're stealing signs with technology. Well, they've always been stealing signs. So there's always been cheating going on. There's no sanctity to baseball.
Yeah, but I think
there's this mythology that's a bunch of bull crap.
Yeah, but I think that baseball is such a step. It's such a statistical. They put so much emphasis on stats.
Yeah, and then
that's
blew
a big
it up
part
by,
of their record
by
book.
Allowing everybody to take steroids for years. Over a decade, they screwed up their own record book.
Well, they have.
They screwed up one of the things that made baseball great and different from other sports is what the numbers did matter a lot more seemingly in baseball than other sports.
That is
how many
true.
Home runs you hit was more important than, you know, who led the league in points per game in the NBA.
That's all true. But I still think, despite what the steroid era did to that part of the game, I still think that the people that are running the game don't want to change it that drastically where all the stats and the accumulations of numbers and all that goes out the window.
Well, you should
because
want,
that's what you need to do.
You should want people to watch.
Well, that's not what they want. They want the stats. Yeah. They want to keep it the way it is because if you make it a 5-inning game or see, don't play as many games, all those stats, you can't. It's totally
see,
different.
Baseball's been a stagnant sport for a very long time. One of the reasons football has evolved and taken over. Obviously, it's a little bit more pleasing visually sport.
Yeah,
people are moving
fantasy,
faster.
You know,
they're hitting
yeah.
each other. No, but take fantasy out of the equation. All I'm right. talking even going further back.
You're talking about just visually watching the sport.
Look what football has done. It continued to evolve and progress and move to a better place to be more pleasing. Baseball has never taken those steps. Basketball has taken smaller steps than football has, but it has taken steps to try and improve. Hockey has taken steps to try and improve. Baseball hasn't. Basketball, adding in the three-point line. Okay, that changes the stats. Football, adding games, going from 12 to 14 to 16 changes the stats. The rules, pass interference rules, changes the stats. They don't care about those. Why? Because it's not as nearly as important as making sure people are actually watching and participating and spending their money on your product.
Baseball would be like, to me, baseball is Nintendo 64. If the Nintendo 64 people, the people in charge of that specific console, were sitting there and saying, why are our numbers down? Why doesn't anyone play our system anymore? But refuses to change or evolve, you'd want to bash your head against the wall. It's obvious. Everything else around, not just around baseball, but in life, changes, evolves, gets faster, whatever you want to say. So things change, and you have to change with them and adapt. Baseball has done none of that. It's society that has changed and baseball that has not. Things around baseball, there are way more forms of entertainment now than there used to be. Netflix, there's this, Hulu, Apple TV, Fitbit, whatever you want. I mean, millions of things at your fingertips that can entertain you in an instant.
Yep.
A 3.5, 4.5 hour baseball game, 2.5 minutes between pitches,
no.
9 innings, 162 games. There is no time for that, especially, there's barely time for that anyway. If you are a caveman. But especially if you have a million and one other things you can do to pass the time. There's no time for baseball, and they have never changed to try to get with the times in terms of what interests people and what people are looking for today. So that's a separate discussion. Who do you want to be the Red Sox next manager?
I don't care, man. I don't care. They put a big...
Who do you think it'll be?
Disgusting taste in my mouth.
Who do you think it'll be?
It's going to be one of these guys that I never really had heard of before.
It's going to be Jason Veritek.
I've never heard of him before.
Yeah. I forgot. I had to look up the name.
I'm cool with that. I'm okay with Veritek. That's the one I'd be like, hey, I'm curious.
Ex-players. They've had success with ex-players. Tito Francona.
They're all ex-players.
Well, no, I mean.
Name me a manager that wasn't an ex-player.
Brady Little.
He didn't play?
I don't think he played Major League Baseball.
He probably had a long minor league career.
Maybe minor league career. He didn't play at the major league level, I don't think. But Terry Francona. Forget about Bobby Valentine. I don't even know. But John Farrell was a major league player. Obviously, Alex Cora. They've had success with those guys.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to be another ex-player. The captain. He's been in the organization for a few years. I don't know if he's still in the organization, but he has coached in the Red Sox organization. I know he did work in Pawtucket, so he sort of put in the time, paid his dues, whatever you want to say. He, like I said, the captain. He's a symbol of Red Sox Nation. I think it's going to be Veritek. It's just a guess. I have no idea.
Grady Little. 5 minor league years.
So he did he play in the majors?
No, he never made the majors.
Okay, so he did play pro ball.
Yeah, he was a Marine Reserve.
Okay.
So I give him a little credit. Yeah, Braves and Yankees organizations, 5 years as minor league pitcher. Yeah, some of the names, Ryan Hannibal threw out there, Ron Renicki, Carlos Fabelis, Bruce Bochy, Dusty Baker, Mike Socha, and Matt Quattaro, and then Veritek. Just hire Veritek. I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't care about any of the other ones. Bochy's a good manager. I know he is,
old.
But he's also like 65 years old. Yeah. Dusty Baker's like
70.
Yeah.
He just had a stroke.
And Socha, I never thought was a good manager. Maybe he was.
Won a World Series.
He won a World Series and then had some teams that were loaded and then did nothing.
But you know they're going to bore. I mean, are these guys that are going to worry about the analytics and the things that these people want to worry about? Whatever. I don't really care.
I don't care.
I just think it'll be an ex-player. They like ex-players. They like ex-Red Sox, people that know the region, the city, the team, the organization.
Hire Veritek. Maybe he's amazing at it. I don't know. I don't really care. I don't care right now what the Red Sox do at their manager position.
I don't either.
Let's go
to football. You want to talk about the championship games?
Please.
Championship games this weekend.
Yes.
Well, let's start. Here's what I want to start with.
Okay.
Your thoughts on the, because we haven't talked since then, the Baltimore Ravens going down 1-and-done in the NFL playoffs. Thoughts, Ben, thoughts. Because correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes.
I can't remember. Somebody said that, I forget who said, somebody was talking about if they got down in games and Lamar Jackson was forced to throw, they weren't going to be as successful as they were throughout the regular season. I can't remember when somebody somewhere said something like that. But you saw
them
lose.
Good job, Devin.
You saw them lose.
It was well said by you, Devin.
Good job. You saw them lose. Your thoughts on them losing? How surprised?
Thrilled.
Surprised.
I mean, I wasn't blown away.
Really?
I wasn't overly stunned by what happened in that game. I told you last week there was a couple things that could go right for Tennessee that could make it into a game. I didn't think they would necessarily win the game.
Yeah.
But I thought they could play a really close game with them. And you're right on the money with Lamar Jackson. Got to make him throw, get him down where he's feeling the pressure, the paranoia of losing whatever that situation is for him, and put him in a position where he can't just play backyard football. He's got to play structured football.
Structured football.
And when you do that and limit certain other abilities of his, it's going to be a recipe for success. And Vrabel is – I'm loving Mike Vrabel as a head coach right now. Before, I wasn't sold. Mm. But the last – 4, 5, 6, 7 weeks of what he's done with the Tennessee Titans, I'm sold. He's a damn good coach. He's a very smart coach. So, in one weird way, I'm glad the Titans won.
You know, if Baltimore had dominated that game and then we got Baltimore, Kansas City, that would have been a juicy AFC Championship game. But
of course.
I think this is pretty juicy right now. Tennessee has beaten New England at New England and Baltimore at Baltimore. And here's what surprised me most about that game. They crushed them. Mm. I did not, even if the Ravens lost, I did not
see them getting
destroyed. I mean, they
absolutely
got destroyed.
Not.
I thought it would have been, hey, we keep it close. We go into the second half, it's close. Tennessee's able to get that 2-score lead, and then the Ravens can't make enough plays because Jackson isn't good throwing the ball, and they come up short. Like, that's what I thought it was going to be if they lost. They got smoked. I thought that they gave up on the run way too soon.
Yeah.
Way too soon. They abandoned their entire set of principles way too soon. Tannehill, give him credit, and it'll be more interesting in this game on Sunday, but he hasn't had to do a lot.
Nope.
But when he has been asked to do something, he's done it. I will be very interested. Do you give the Titans any chance against the Chiefs?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think they win. I think the Chiefs end up winning that game. But I think it's going to be a close, and I think it's going to be a really good game.
Titans plus 7. Would you take the Titans in the points? So they'd have to lose by less than 7.
6, okay. Yeah. Because I think they lose by
less than
3
7.
Or 6.
Okay.
I think it's going to be a close. I think it's going to be a tight game. So I would be shocked if one team blew. I would be shocked if the Chiefs blew out the Titans. I'd certainly be shocked if the Titans blew out the Chiefs. But I think it's going to be a close game. I think it's going to be a really good game. I think it's actually going to be a better game than the NFC Championship game, because I have a feeling that that might turn into a blowout pretty quickly.
I've been shocked with the amount of people saying that Aaron Rodgers is going to step up and win. I just cannot see that at all. Jimmy Garoppolo, let me remind people, Jimmy Garoppolo is not Blake Bortles. Now, is he?
No.
Is he Pat Mahomes? No.
No. No.
But he's not Blake Bortles. I mean, he can make some plays. They have weapons. They run the ball. I feel like they're going to be, they're going to be in control of that game most of the way. Going back to the AFC game, look, I think how you beat the Chiefs is how the Patriots beat the Chiefs last year. I think that's how you beat them, especially when they're at their best, when they're playing well. The Patriots beat the Chiefs. The team that the Patriots beat last year wasn't the Chiefs that we saw back in October when they were in the midst of a 6-4 run.
Yeah.
They were playing at their best. I think the Patriots' defense, they were the ones that shut Mahomes down in that first half. Then he caught fire, and then Brady was able to make enough plays late to get the win. Obviously, winning the coin toss helped. They got the ball. They were able to go down and score. I think that's how you beat the Chiefs, especially in Kansas City. They're going to have to control some of that. Like, the first quarter is going to have to fly by.
Yeah, well, basically, if you look at the Chiefs, in the playoffs, with this current Andy Reid, Mahomes, whatever, they start really slow.
Yeah.
They start slow, and then they can turn it on.
Correct.
After a quarter and a half and just explode on you and put a 51 points.
Or, I mean, last year, they scored 24 points in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
So it doesn't even have to be a quarter and a half, which is dangerous.
What the Titans have to do is they have to take advantage of the Chiefs' weird slow starts, and they have to put up some points, kind of like what Houston did. I think they're better defense than what Houston has. I think they're much better coached team.
And obviously better running the ball.
And much better running the ball, so they can control the time and clock much more
effectively. Probably have a better
offensive
line, too.
They definitely have a much better offensive line. They don't have a better quarterback. But
no.
They definitely have a much better offensive line. And they don't have better wide receiving options. But they have pretty good wide receiving options. So they have to take advantage of Kansas City's slow starts, try and put some points, and then slow the game down.
Correct.
And that was what Houston was incapable of doing. They could not slow the game down and take too much time off for the Chiefs' offense to be effective when they got the ball back. So that they have to take advantage of that and rely on Derrick Henry to slow grind that game down to a halt.
That, I love the point you just made right there. That is exactly the problem the Texans had. The Texans, despite the 24-point lead, they could never slow the game down. Because even when they were scoring the 24 points and they got out to the lead, everything was happening so fast.
Yeah.
They had the big play down the field, and then they had the punt block, and then there was another turnover, the punt, and they scored, and it was 24-0. So that kind of, despite the fact that the Chiefs were down big, it sort of played into the game that they want to play.
Yeah.
You know, it played into their hands because that's the game they want to play, a million miles an hour.
Well, they're like the, 2008 Suns.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're a little different than everyone else, where they're going to go, they're going to push the pace a hell of a lot faster than most other teams. And when you try and play their game with them, they're going to beat you at it.
Yeah.
So you got to take them out of their game, slow the game way down, and give Mahomes less opportunities with the ball.
What the Patriots were able to do last year, and the reason the Patriots beat the Chiefs last year, was because they were able to slow the game down, okay? And they were able to benefit that way.
Yeah.
They kept the Chiefs down. They didn't score any points in the first half. They slowed it way down. Then, when the Chiefs did turn it up, the Patriots had enough to turn it up with them. and they just outran him to the finish line. That's what the Texans could never do. When they got the counterpunch from the Chiefs last week, they had no answer. They couldn't slow it down, speed it up again with them. They had that first burst, and they couldn't do it. What the Titans have to do is similar to the Patriots.
Yeah.
Slow it down and keep it slow as long as you can. And then if it does, and it's going to, when they do find a rhythm, the Chiefs, you have to find some, you have to make some kind of counterpunch,
mm-hmm.
and then hope you're there at the end. And then, like the regular season game, maybe somebody makes a mistake. Maybe Andy Reid becomes Andy Reid and he screws it up. That's what you have to hope for if you're the Titans. Because straight up, they're not as good as the Chiefs. Let's get Dan and Cranston, who's on the line. Good morning, Dan.
Whoa, that was quick.
Sorry about that. How you doing?
Good. I like the Chiefs tomorrow. They're just a better team. I think Cinderella's shoe is about due. But have you talked the NFC Championship game
yet? Not yet. You haven't thought?
Well, it's the same as last week. I just think that the 49ers are the most complete team. And they prove. I don't see any difference of the game script last week with Minnesota than I do with Green Bay. It's all about running. Dalvin Cook, yeah, you know, they got good running backs. Once they shut down the running game, they're going to tee off on the quarterback, and, you know, that's going to be it. I just don't see how they're going to hang with them, you know. Probably same type of score. They win comfortably by 10 to 14 points.
Okay, so we don't have to get all into it right now. We'll have time for that. But right now, Dan, who is your Super Bowl favorite right now heading into championship weekend right now?
Easily the 49ers. They're the healthiest, and they're the most complete team. I'm going to give you a quick analogy. I don't know if anyone saw this. I actually saw it online. I forget what it was. Jimmy Johnson, right? He says, this 49ers team right now is the most complete stacked team that he's seen since his early Cowboys in the early 90s.
It's a hell of a statement.
Of course he brings it back to himself.
But the point, I think he's right, because they are loaded on both sides of the ball. They're young. And I think that, you know, they can beat you 10 different ways. If Kyle Shanahan wants to score 40 points, they'll score 40 points. If he wants to grind it out, they'll grind it out. And the defense can take over a game. I just don't, the funny thing was, if it ends up being the Chiefs and the 49ers, the Chiefs are actually favored by 3 points, I think. I would take that and bet the house on it. Because to me,
San Fran +3, you're saying?
Yeah, they're the underdog. That to me is incredible. And I think the 49ers are the Cowboys and the Chiefs are the Bills of the early 90s. I can see the parallel. I lived through it.
Yeah.
You win championships being a balanced team, and the 49ers are more balanced than any team I've seen in a long, long time.
Okay.
That's it.
All right, thanks, Dan. And have a good one. That is exactly what I was just going to say. That's the point I was just going to make about the Chiefs. Are the Chiefs, that's a good comparison, the Bills from the early 90s where it was all about offense and they had
I don't think it's a good comparison.
So they have, okay. So that's the question I'm asking.
The Bills of the 90s also had really good defensive players.
Bruce Smith, all right.
Yeah, Smith, you had Daryl Talley. You had really good defensive players on that team.
Well, hold on. This is what I want to know. If I recall, in 2014, we knew the Patriots. I think it was 2014. Correct me if I'm wrong. What I'm wondering is, if the Chiefs are able to win the Super Bowl, are we going to look back and say, damn, this defense was better than we thought, better than we realized, or are they just an offensive juggernaut getting dragged along by Pat Mahomes? That's what I think we need to find out. Because the defense has played well. But I remember one of those Patriots, I think it was 2014, when you looked at that defense, after the fact especially, you were like, you know what, damn, that team was awesome on defense. I mean, they actually had a better secondary than the Seahawks that year. And we sort of didn't appreciate it at the time, but they had a better secondary that year with Revis and Browner and McCourty and Chung and Harmon and Logan Ryan and Malcolm Butler than the Seahawks did that year. And I'm wondering
they were eighth in the league in defense that year, though.
The Chiefs aren't that high. So
I'm saying the Patriots in 2014.
Right. So they were better. So maybe that's not a good comparison either. I'm just wondering, the Chiefs, I'm trying to decide if they're an offensive juggernaut being carried by Mahomes, or if they have decent balance, the type of balance that can win you a Super Bowl. Because no, I don't think that the Patriots, maybe this is what it is, the Patriots in 2014, they weren't so much better on offense than they were on defense. That's maybe where I was trying to go.
There wasn't a disparity the way there is, seemingly, on this team. What I was going to say was the Patriots were eighth that year in defense. The Chiefs this year, seventh. But it's a slightly different league, different talent spread across the league.
Is that based on yards, total defense?
No, that's based on points.
Points. What about yards? I want to know yards.
Yards, Chiefs were 17th. Okay. And give me a minute on the Patriots.
I don't care about that. 17th, okay.
Yeah, they gave up a lot of yards, but it's their quick pace offense that is their weapon. Their defense is okay. It's not great. It's the offense is allowing the defense to be able to play a different style. When you get up to these big leads, you can play a slightly different style. You know, you all of a sudden, you're pushing the pace with your offense like that. Your defense can play differently than it might have to in a close game. So look at Baltimore last week. Their defense was playing really well because they were having these big leads to play with. Once they didn't have a big lead to play with, their defense looked completely different. So I think when we, if the Chiefs win the Super Bowl, we're going to look back on it and we're going to give Mahomes credit. The offense credit, Andy Reid credit, and the defense is going to get very little.
Okay. Let's take a break. We'll get back to this. We'll talk about the Patriots. This is the Mark and Kitchen Show, 103.7 WEEI.
We now return to Mark and Kitchen on Sports Radio 103.7 WEEI.
All right, back here on the Mark and Kitchen Show, 103.7 WEEI. Few things I want to get to here. Let's talk about real quick, one last thing to wrap up the AFC Championship game.
Yeah.
The big thing I'm looking for, Ryan Tannehill. He's been efficient when he's been asked to produce in the playoffs. But if they get down, which is obviously possible with Pat Mahomes, mm-hmm. can he then produce? Because he was playing really well, obviously, towards the end of the regular season. I mean, they were throwing it really well. If they get into a situation where they have to throw it like Baltimore did last week, and Henry is sort of mitigated, can he produce? That's the big question I have. I don't know. That's why I'm not picking Tennessee.
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think he's all of a sudden pull off a Mahomes performance,
correct,
down 24,
correct,
and then just light it up.
He needs to keep it close, have Henry help out, lean on him, make some throws, and keep it close.
Yeah, he managed the game. Just manage the game. We're not going to ask you to do too much. We're not going to ask you to do too little. Just do your role. Do your job.
He might have to do more than just manage the game. But if he's asked to do a little bit more, can he do it? He's been underutilized, isn't the word, but he's sort of just kind of been there. He's been hanging out the last few weeks. He hasn't really had to do a whole lot. He did make some nice throws in the Patriots win and in the Ravens win. But if it gets more, if the style of this game on Sunday becomes more up-tempo, can he step up and rise up to that challenge? I'm not sure. That's why I'm not picking the Titans in this game. But I love Mike Vrabel. I'm rooting for him.
Well, the good thing for Tannehill in a situation like that is he can be effective with his legs,
yeah,
and make plays without having to throw. So that can help him kind of find a rhythm of progressing the ball down the field. And that can help that situation, but I'm not confident in it.
Yeah. It'll be interesting. I mean, they're just so hot. The Titans are really hot.
They are.
So it'll be interesting and just fascinating to see how they go in again. And by the way,
they feel like the Giants in 07 in the playoffs, just marching through and they're just hot.
But there's some stats that are interesting.
Yeah.
I'll give you one. Andy Reid, 1-8 all time against the Titans.
That's
a really
weird stat.
Here's another one. Derrick Henry, 3-0 all time against the Chiefs. Just not that it means anything going into this game, but those are just why? Interesting. So I'm looking forward to that. The one thing I'll say about the NFC Championship game, and I know you have a thought.
Yeah.
To me, it's about Jimmy G. If Jimmy G has to be a disaster, I think, for the San Francisco 49ers to lose this game and maybe the Super Bowl. If he plays anywhere near the capability, if he plays the way he played in that game against the Cardinals opening night with the Patriots, or if he, you know, for the most part, how he's played this season.
Particularly in the second half of the year, yeah.
Yeah, if he plays a competent, quality game, they're going to win. And they're probably going to win the Super Bowl if he plays. He's going to have, what did I see? They're 2-0 when he throws two interceptions? 3-0 when he throws two interceptions, the 49ers are 3-0.
That that's a mind-boggling stat.
It is.
That makes
I mean,
no
they
sense.
Just when they have so. That's what you were saying. They have so many different ways to beat you. That's why I think if he plays a clean game, 200 yards, two touchdowns, no picks, you don't have a chance to beat them. I don't think.
Oh, I think Green Bay has no chance in this game.
I don't either.
I think they blow out.
Totally
Green Bay.
With you.
And I'm not a Jimmy G fan, really. I don't care that he was the backup quarterback for the Patriots. It doesn't make me a super fan of Jimmy G's. But I really don't like Aaron Rodgers. Just don't like Aaron Rodgers. I don't like that guy. And I don't like this legend of Aaron Rodgers that some people in the media have created for him. So I'm rooting for Jimmy G, and I'm rooting for the 49ers to just slap around the Packers and embarrass Aaron Rodgers today. Tomorrow. That's what I want to see more than anything. In either of these two games.
Is there a matchup in the Super Bowl that would be most juicy that you'd love to see?
Yeah, 49ers, Chiefs.
Yeah, that'd be the juiciest matchup. Even though if the Titans can find a way to beat the Chiefs, that wouldn't lack juice either.
There's some juiciness in that one, too.
Yeah.
There is a little bit, especially when the team's been playing as hot as Tennessee has played, that inherently gives it a little more oomph going into that game. But if you end up with there's juice if you end up with Chiefs-Packers.
Yeah, there is.
Because then it's like kind of like, hey, there's Aaron Rodgers, and then there's a lot of people, the heir apparent to Aaron Rodgers and Mahomes in a lot of people's minds.
And I'll tell you another reason. Because the Packers, if they win and go to the Super Bowl, I think that means Rodgers played out of his skull.
I do, too.
He's absolutely out of his mind, Superman.
Yeah, he had a
magic
game.
And then you'd be coming off of that performance, going into the Super Bowl against Mahomes. They're not going to beat the Packers. I don't think the Packers can beat the 49ers grinding it out and winning on defense. That's not going to happen.
Yeah, Aaron Jones running for 220 yards, not happening.
Rodgers would have to play out of his mind, and that's the performance you'd have going into the Super Bowl against Mahomes or whatever. So that would be really good. I still think 49ers and Chiefs would be the juiciest matchup.
Hypothetically, 49ers, Chiefs, that's your Super Bowl matchup. Who are you rooting for?
49ers. I'm rooting for Jimmy G. I've established that.
Why?
Well, first of all, I like him. I covered him. I liked the cut of his jib.
You have the same hair as him.
We have the same, similar hair. I thought he was a good dude when he was here. I liked when he was on the field. I like how he performed with the Patriots. And I'll be totally honest with you. I think, as a Patriots supporter and fan, I think it would be kind of funny if, once again, the year Tom Brady doesn't win the Super Bowl,
Jimmy G does.
The guy who was drafted by the Patriots and cultivated by the Patriots and the understudy to Tom Brady won the Super Bowl. I think people nationally would once again throw the side eye towards New England.
Sure.
And that I kind of like.
Okay. One more. Ravens. What am I talking about? 49ers, Titans.
Then I don't care. Because I like the Titans too. I know people in Tennessee from having worked down there, and they're great fans. They're cordial people. They're not like some of these other douchebag fan bases.
Like Philly.
Yeah. Or even some Chiefs fans that I've encountered. They're douchebags.
Or even some Patriots fans.
Sure. I like Vrabel. Derrick Henry. I mean, I feel weird. I don't care if like Logan Ryan wins a Super Bowl there or Malcolm. That doesn't matter.
That means nothing to me.
Derrick Henry, he's earned it if he can win. I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing them win. And also, you know, I can get on board. You remember what happened 20 years ago in that Super Bowl? I mean, that was painful, the 1 yard where they were 1 yard away.
Oh, 99
yeah,
Rams
or whatever
Titans.
It was, 21 years ago. 1 yard away, I could get on board with that, like them finally winning
tackle?
A Super Bowl.
Who made that tackle?
Give me a second.
Mike Jones.
Jones.
Who?
Mike Jones.
Thank you.
I would just observe that game.
Yeah, there's been too many of those.
Actually, check that. I'd probably root for the Titans.
Yeah,
because then what would happen is I'd probably find a way. I don't want the Chiefs to win. If you haven't caught on to that, I don't want the Chiefs to win. So if
The
Super Bowl.
Yeah.
If it was the Titans and 49ers, I guess I'd root for the Titans just because then I might feel a little bit bad that the Patriots didn't keep Jimmy G if Tom Brady does leave, that he won a Super Bowl. But I wouldn't care.
Listen, I'd be rooting for the Titans and Mike Vrabel.
Yeah, I like Vrabel.
Because then I'd be saying, okay, now I want Vrabel as the next Patriots coach.
Okay, there you go.
It'll be a good story to write off, too.
What?
It'll be a good story to write off if the Titans win the Super Bowl. If
they
go in.
What do you mean?
What do I mean?
It would just be a good story.
Going into New England, beating the Patriots.
Oh!
Going to Baltimore.
It'd be one of the juiciest championship DVDs of all time.
I didn't understand what he meant by write off.
Yeah.
But no, Devin, you're right. It would be a great story along the way. You topple the mighty Patriots. Then you beat this season's darling in the Ravens and Lamar Jackson. Then you beat last season's darling and a team that looks like it's on the ascension in the Chiefs. You stomp out three teams like that on your way on the road. Yeah, I mean, it's like the Giants in 2007.
But again,
and they're the number six team, too.
Yeah, six seed. Again, though, I love defense. So I will not have a problem seeing the San Francisco 49ers put their flag on top of the NFL because I still think that wins, and I want that to still win. I don't want to see Mahomes score 51, 48, and 52 on his way to a Super Bowl. We'll be back.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.